driving me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday and my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here. Yeah, I'm here. On Nova M Radio. How you doing? It's Friday night. What kind of atrocity did the Bush crime family get? Okay. Let's start again. Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us tonight. Well, what kind of atrocities did the Mensa man commit today? Actually, it was yesterday. It just got in the paper today. Astonishing, astonishing. He did host a town hall meeting in Nashville yesterday also to talk about Iraq and taxes and the economy and English muffins. So hold on to your booties because moron sounds on the program tonight. Yes, indeed. Oh, it just gets curiouser. And curiouser, doesn't it? This is going to be a weekend where I try to get my mind back. Sunday is Molly's birthday. We're having a party for her third birthday. But aside from that, I think what Kathy and I are going to do this weekend is just kind of, I don't know. There's a bistro we go to called Carpe Diem. And, yeah, I know. And we drink wine and watch. It's a sidewalk cafe, and we watch the people walk by. And I think we're going to do some of that. All right? You want to do that? Kathy's looking at me going, yes, can we go now? From the Washington Post today, and several people sent this to me. JP sent a note with it. Just when you thought you couldn't be shocked, the Bush administration has come up with another idea of executive authority. They did this yesterday when Bush was out giving this talk before a totally randomly selected audience. Oh, yeah. Where was he? In Tennessee? Where was he? Nashville? Oh, my God. Anyway, while he was doing this, the Justice Department, the Bush crime family, came up with a whole new idea about the move in this country from democracy to dictatorship, and that is in this dispute over the firing of the nine U.S. attorneys, where Congress is trying to get information about how the Justice Department has been turned into nothing but a huge whorehouse where Cheney and Bush can go and relieve themselves of the Justice Department. Here's the new ruling. The Justice Department will never be allowed to pursue contempt charges initiated by Congress against White House officials once the president has invoked executive privilege. Now, this means that Bush and Cheney are so far above the law as to literally give them regal power. This is incredible. As the Washington Post puts it, Bush administration officials unveiled a bold new assertion of executive authority yesterday in the dispute over the firing of nine U.S. attorneys, saying the Justice Department will never be allowed to pursue contempt charges initiated by Congress against White House officials once the president has invoked executive privilege. The position presents serious legal and political obstacles for congressional Democrats who have begun laying the groundwork for contempt proceedings against current and former White House officials in order to pry loose information about the dismissals. Under federal law, a statutory contempt citation by the House or the Senate must be submitted to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, quote, whose duty it shall be to bring the matter before the grand jury for its action, end quote. Now, under this new ruling, Truth Seekers, a U.S. attorney, specifically the one in the District of Columbia, would not be permitted to bring contempt charges or even convene a grand jury in a case involving Bush's claim of executive privilege. Do you understand what this means? Anything can be made executive privilege, as anything is being made executive privilege. What has happened today is the entire oversight function of the legislative branch of this government has been canceled. A senior Bush crime family official said, speaking on condition of anonymity, because he's not authorized to discuss the issue publicly, said, "It's been long understood that in circumstances like these, the constitutional prerogatives of the president would make it a futile and purely political act for Congress to refer contempt citations to U.S. attorneys," end quote. Really? How could that be? All we have to do is go back to the Clinton years. And none of this was claimed by the Clinton administration when they were subpoenaed for everything except their dirty... Well, I guess they were subpoenaed for their dirty underwear, weren't they? Mark Rozelle, a professor of public policy at George Mason University, who has written a book on executive privilege issues, calls this new stance astonishing. He says... Quote, "That's a breathtakingly broad view of the president's role in the system of separation of powers. What the statement is saying is that the president's claim of executive privilege trumps everything. Everything. Constitutional law, case law, Supreme Court rulings, the power of the legislative branch, contempt power, grand jury of power, all of it has been flushed away." Now, according to the Washington Post, the Bush administration's statement is a dramatic attempt to seize the upper hand in an escalating constitutional battle with Congress. Yadda, 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 yadda. You see, yesterday the Judiciary Committee voted to lay the groundwork for these contempt proceedings against Josh Bolton, the White House chief of staff. And that follows a similar decision, when was it, last week, against Harriet Myers, former White House counsel. You know, Congress is trying to do its job, and the Bush crime family. This is, who said it last night? This is like a chess game? Check, 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 checkmate. Sentiment. Now, some Democrats have responded to this. Harry Reid, who continues to insist, along with his House counterpart, whose obligation it is to impeach these bastards, Harry Reid says it's an outrageous abuse of executive privilege, and added, quote, "The White House must stop stonewalling and start being accountable to Congress and the American people." Oh, okay, Harry. By God, when they hear the power behind that statement, they're going to collapse and give you everything you want, right? Oh, my God. Charles Schumer said the Bush administration is, quote, "hastening a constitutional crisis." Really? Who'd have thought? Henry Waxman said the position, quote, "makes a mockery of the ideal that no one is above the law," end quote. Waxman added, "I suppose the next step would be just disbanding the Justice Department," end quote. Henry, yo, Henry, it's already been disbanded. Oh, and I like Waxman. But it's what are these Democrats talking about? What are they talking about? Well, this lays the the framework. This lays the foundation for all sorts of hello, boys and girls, listen up. When the Bush crime family engineered an attack on this country on September 11, 2001, that is what laid the framework for everything. Let me back up. When the Bush crime family stopped the counting of the votes on December 12, 2000, and five Supreme Court justices declared George Bush the loser, the winner, that laid the groundwork. What a week. Arrogant. Power grabs by this Bush crime family without, do you know this, that the Fifth Amendment has been declared null and void? That's right. The Fifth Amendment, with this directive we talked about the other day, the one that gives the Bush crime family the power to seize property of people who threaten stabilization efforts in Iraq. That's right. I threaten stabilization efforts in Iraq every night on this program by saying the things I say and putting on the air people who say things similar. So this program, this network, threatens the stabilization efforts in Iraq every night. Oh, my God. What about that, Kathy? That was the executive order that slithered out of the Bush crime family this week. Anybody who undermines efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq or to provide humanitarian assistance to the Iraqi people. If you undermine efforts to provide humanitarian assistance, what does that mean? And when they decide to seize everything you own and destroy your life, Bush doesn't even have to tell anyone who's doing it. Or anyone who tells that he's doing it will suffer the same consequences. We're in trouble. Past the hour. Now, in addition to this executive order that nullifies the Fifth Amendment, as we heard, when was it? Yesterday or the day before? When Valerie Plame's lawsuit thrown out of court, the federal judge who did this is a U.S. District Judge John Bates. He dismissed the case on jurisdictional grounds. And said he would not express an opinion on the constitutional arguments. The jurisdictional grounds, I guess, means that the court in which they filed the lawsuit didn't have jurisdiction or something. I have no idea, but the end result is, well, before I get to that, Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame's husband, will be on this program Tuesday night, so maybe we can get a more direct answer from him. But the end result is this ends any attempt, I think, to try to find out the truth that Irving Lewis Libby so successfully sunk and was convicted by a jury and had his jail time commuted by the criminal. This is astonishing. And the judge, John Bates, who threw out the lawsuit against Cheney, Rove, Scooter Libby, and Richard Armitage, who is he? Well, as we mentioned last night, this guy, he was deputy independent counsel for the Whitewater investigation. That means he worked for Ken Starr, from 1995 to mid-1997. And when he had that job, he forced the Clinton White House to release thousands of documents related to Hillary Clinton's conversations about Whitewater. Right. He also was appointed then as a federal judge in December 2001 by Bush. That was his payoff. A year later, he dismissed a lawsuit filed by the government, the General Accounting Office, against Cheney over access to Cheney's Energy Task Force documents. And this judge said that the General Accounting Office lacked authority to sue the vice president. You don't have any authority, so you're not going to know. Screw you. Go away. In February 2006, this judge was appointed by Chief Justice John Roberts to serve as a judge on the United States FISA Court. That's the one that decides whether or not Bush can tap your phone, although Bush has been tapping your phone and my phone for 6 years with nobody's permission. This guy, this Bates, replaced a judge who resigned in protest over the illegal wiretapping, right? So they put this guy in, Bates, another payoff, like he cares. And in August of 2006, Bates declared it acceptable for Bush to sign a bill that had not been passed by Congress. That's what regents, that's what kings do. I'm going to pass a law.
Okay, Your Majesty. Sign here.
George W. Bush. This is what Lee Rogers writes at RogueGovernment.com. George Bush, who has already declared himself a dictator in the case of a national emergency, has now issued an executive order that effectively destroys the Fifth Amendment. A few days ago, Bush signed a new executive order in which he uses broad language to claim that he has the power to seize the property of any person who undermines any effort to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq. The language in the order is broadly defined as and doesn't specifically identify a group or or individuals or anybody that the order applies to. It opens up the possibility of anti-war protesters and other political dissidents having their property confiscated for simply speaking out against the law. Or the war, I'm sorry. The executive order says any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretaries of State and Defense to have committed or to pose a risk of committing an act or acts that have the purpose or effect of threatening the peace or stability of Iraq or the government of Iraq or undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq or to provide humanitarian assistance to Iraq. This is insanity. Basically, Bush is declaring that he can take people's property without due process if one of the thuggish operatives in his crime family determines that in some way a person is undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq. Now, obviously, Bush in this directive doesn't mention the Fifth Amendment or due process anywhere in the order. There's no longer due process. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's the former Fifth Amendment.
United. What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better.
About 26 before the hour, we're going to talk with Senator Mike Gravel here in just a second. How many of you know about this guy? Did you do your homework? Go to his webpage. He's an Army veteran. Goes all the way back to the Korean War era. He served as a special agent in the Counterintelligence Corps. He holds a degree in economics from Columbia, 4 honorary degrees in law and public affairs. He served in the Alaska House of Representatives in the 60s, Speaker in the 60s of the Alaska House. He then represented Alaska in the U.S. Senate from 1969 to 1981. In 1971, now listen up, he waged a successful one-man filibuster for 5 months that forced the Nixon administration to cut a deal effectively ending the draft in the United States. He is most prominently known for his release of the Pentagon Papers. Seekers, I don't know what happened there. We lost our connection, and oh my God, I thought we were going to have to listen to Mike Gravel again. So I have no idea what happened there. Anyway, getting to, back to what I was talking about, and we're live. This new directive that we talked about the other night, where Bush has effectively ended the Fifth Amendment. It takes the Fifth Amendment and flushes it down the toilet. For example, if it appears that if you donate to a charity that the Bush administration determines without any proof is trying to undermine the Iraqi government, all of your assets can be frozen, whether you know about it or not. No due process, no being hauled before a grand jury, no investigation, just in illegally tapping your phone. If you make a contribution to some organization that these rat bastards don't like. And there's, no matter how tenuous a connection, they can show, well, this is connected to the World Can't Wait, or .org, or something Cindy Sheehan's doing, or VoteVets.org, and those groups are trying to undermine our efforts with Iraq. Therefore, we seize everything you have. Now, the order also permits the targeting of people who aid someone else whose assets have been blocked under the order. If you get your assets blocked and I raise money so that you can make your mortgage payment and you and your spouse and kids not be thrown on the street, then they can come and take me. And the Bush crime family under this directive does not have to disclose which organizations are subject to having their assets frozen. In other words, you will never know. Maybe you contributed to Amnesty International, or some defense fund for people being held as enemy combatants in Cuba. You'll never know. Son of a bitch! Bruce Fine, the Justice Department official in the Reagan administration, the one who wrote the articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton, says the following. Certainly it is highly constitutionally questionable to empower the government to destroy someone economically without giving notice. Fine goes on to say, this is so sweeping, it's staggering. I've never seen anything so broad that it expands beyond terrorism, beyond seeking to use violence or the threat of violence to cower or intimidate a population. This covers stabilization in Iraq. I suppose you could issue an executive order about stabilization in Afghanistan as well. And it goes beyond even attempting violence to cover those who pose, quote, a significant risk, end quote, of violence. Suppose Congress passed a law saying you've committed a crime if there's a risk that you might commit a crime. End quote. So, how does the Bush crime family feel about a T-shirt that says, "Stop the War"? Is such a T-shirt considered destabilizing? This is unbelievable. Listen to me. This is unbelievable. And I don't know. Was it on the news tonight? Was it, Kathy? Huh? No? This was not on the news? It wasn't? It was in the Washington Post, for God's sake. It's all over the internet. You mean Charlie Gibson? Or is he on vacation? The Brian Williams? Wolf Blitzer, nobody talked about this? Just Hartman talked about it the other day, and I don't know, did Randy talk? I don't know, maybe Randy talked about it. We're talking about it. Is that it? That's it. Okay. Make sure you have your passport, Truth Seeker. Unless you want to stay and go for the fourth box, but I got to pause and catch my breath here. Now, on top of all of this, Suzanne sends me the following. It says Democratic leaders in the House and Senate are slowing their drive to revamp the nation's voting system. Aides said yesterday. It says House leaders now advocate putting off. House leaders are Democrats. House leaders now advocate putting off the most sweeping changes in how we vote until 2012, 4 years later than planned. Overhauling voting systems before next year's presidential election had once been a top Democratic priority, primarily to allow greater accountability and be certain that all the votes registered on computerized touchscreen systems were counted. But election officials told Congress they couldn't make the changes in time for the balloting in November 2008, particularly in light of the extra workload involved in preparing for next year's much earlier presidential primary season. Confronted by similar concerns, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, and the chairwoman of the Senate Rules Committee, said she had already decided against seeking any major changes in voting equipment before 2010. Ms. Feinstein said, quote, my sense is there's no way to get this thing in place by the election 2008, and without adequate time, we could cause real problems in the election, end quote. Senate Democrats say that stretching out the timetable here, you know, let's move it to 2010, 2012, will increase their chances to win enough Republican support to put the changes into law. Son of a bitch, they're still talking about it, Republican support.
House Democratic officials say they are now working on compromise legislation that could allow hundreds of counties
in 20 states to simply add tiny cash register style printers to their touchscreen machines for the 2008 and 2010 elections while waiting for manufacturers to develop better technology by 2012. Oh, Jesus, laugh, Malloy. Laugh, monkey, so you don't start crying. Laugh, monkey! Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate, truth seekers, have decided that the Help America Vote Act and all that nonsense that was supposed to unsteal our elections in the future, well, that's all going to have to wait a while because, you know, it would be too difficult, I guess, to, you know what? I have enough time here to print up 50 million ballots, paper ballots, and just hand them out to people. I mean, I would be willing to do that. I would be willing to spend the next 14 months just printing paper ballots where people could just write in the name of the candidate they want to be president or senator or representative. But state electoral officials, most of whom are Republican, I guess, say, no, we don't have time to make any changes. So, and Dianne Feinstein says, oh, okay, well then, to hell with it. Okay. And Suzanne, who sent this to me, her email that came with it said, Mike, I don't know about you, but I'm done. Finish. This is it. The grand finale. Without the integrity of our vote, what do we have? The Democrats are indeed the same, just as crooked and hooked up with the lobbyists as the dirty Republicans. Feinstein is well known for her and her husband's dealings, and she's a traitor. These people don't care what happens to America, our country, or the Constitution. Why should they? They've got enough money to live wherever they want for the next, oh, say, 10, 20 years that they have left. They've sold us out. The part of me that cuts off my nose to spite my face hopes that every single Democrat that is coward gets kicked the hell out of office and that freaking Giuliani gets in to privatize everything and make this a true fascist country. I say it now that I'm done. I'm done. Suzanne.
Keep on lying all the time. George W. and Cheney Day couldn't win without a slimy trip. To Washington they had to run. States' rights weren't that much fun. Don't you hate that crap? They just keep.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. Again, I apologize for the audio screw-ups. I have no idea what's going on. Nothing is different here in our studios in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. Nothing is different in our main control room in Phoenix. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I have no idea what happened, but something did. I hope you got most of what I was saying about this new directive that Bush signed that cancels the Fifth Amendment. But people listening, no matter how you've been listening, online, Sirius, XM, or the affiliates, apparently there was some kind of, I wonder if we're being targeted. I seriously wonder sometimes, Kathy. Some of the stuff we say on this program is pretty much out there, politically speaking. And I just wonder sometimes to what extent the connection that is necessary to get this program up on the satellite is tampered with, the connection between here and our flagship station in Phoenix. I really do. Tinfoil hat or no, I don't give a damn about tinfoil hats. I just wonder. I wonder why we seem to have problems sometimes, and no other program I listen to when I listen has these problems. Have you ever noticed that? Are you there? No other program that I'm aware of has these problems. By the way, a documentary film, 9/11 Eyewitness, is going to be presented as part of the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival this Sunday, July 22nd, Molly's birthday, in Manhattan. The screening for this film will start at 6 p.m., and it's going to be shown at City Cinemas Village East. You got to go see this. Our good friend Jesse, the editor of TVNewsLies.org, will be a guest of the producers of this documentary, and people who attend the screening can meet the producers at the theater. And Jesse from TVNewsLies.org will hang around and meet, talk with people and answer questions after the film. Now, on details on how to get tickets, just go to TVNewsLies.org. TVNewsLies.org. You know who they are, and you've heard me talk about them. You've been there. TVNewsLies.org. Click Editor's Blog on the right top corner of the page, and you get all the information. Editor's Blog at TVNewsLies.org. It's a documentary, 9/11 Eyewitness, and it's going to be at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival day after tomorrow, Sunday, in Manhattan. City Cinemas Village East, 6 p.m. Go look at it, and then you can call in Monday and let me know what you saw, because I can't make it. All right, Chuckle Nuts, speaking at a town hall meeting in Nashville. When we get to the question part, it's astonishing to me. I don't know where they get these people. Yes, I do. Of course I do. They get them from the local, no matter where he goes, the local Republican, I love Jesus and hate everything else organizations. And they bring these drones, sheep, into wherever Bush is going to speak. And if you watch any of this stuff on television, you see somehow they come up with a couple of non-white faces, but most of the faces are white people, the kind of white people that just scare the Christ out of me. They just make me want to run screaming into the woods and smear some kind of coloring all over my body so I don't look white. It's horrifying. You see these white people sitting there, and you see Bush bobbing and weaving and talking this gibberish nonsense, and all these white faces sitting there, bleh, bleh. Blah, blah. It's horrifying. I can't I don't know where I am. Kathy, save me. Get a grip. Now, before we break, you got to hear this first. We got time for the first one? Okay, before taking town hall questions from the citizens of Nashville, hey, buns and muffins.
Some of the employees from the Nashville Bun Company here, thank you for being here today. I love going to small businesses. Small businesses.
Hi.
Hey, Truth Seekers, really it's not deja vu, it's just a best of program, so please hold your calls. Welcome back, 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We are talking with Senator Mike Gravel, Democratic presidential hopeful, and okay, I'm ready to get some wisdom here, Senator Gravel. I don't know why I'm coming across as such a dumbass tonight, but I swear I'm just having a hard time getting my mind around direct democracy.
This is the difficulty
yeah.
of getting this point across, because we're schooled from childhood that we control the body politic by voting on Election Day, but we don't. What they do is they raise money from special interests to manipulate the electoral process, and then after they get elected, they haven't empowered you. You've disempowered yourself, and all you can do is write them and protest them to do the right thing, and they can't. They can't generically. The nature of representative government does not permit that to happen. Let me give you the example. What comes into the mind of an elected official? Whether it's the president, whether it's a senator, a congressman, what comes into that mind, and these are not pejorative terms. What it is how is this going to affect my reelection, my vote? That's
right.
Normal. That's human nature. The second thing that comes into the mind before you're making a public decision, and that is, how is this going to affect the people who put the money up to get me here and keep me here? Then the next thing comes into mind is, how does this affect my party? Because when my party's in power, I have power. Now, we're at the fourth level, and we haven't even addressed the public interest. We haven't even talked about my ideology or the fact if I'm a crook, like Duke Cunningham.
All right, where are we going to get the candidates other than you and Dennis Kucinich?
No, that's not there. Dennis Kucinich does not believe in what I'm talking about.
Okay, where are we going to get the
he
type of...
He doesn't even understand it, nor does any other member of Congress.
All right, I waved the red flag again. I didn't mean to. Where are we going to get the candidates or the office holders who are so pure of heart, Senator Gravel, that they will respond to their higher voices and not to what you just laid out?
First off, they don't exist. My God, they don't exist. You're
right.
Talking about you want saints. There's no saints.
Well,
Madison
no, I don't
made
want
that
them.
Very clear.
No, I don't want them. You're describing the type of people.
No, I just described what is the generic flaw in representative government. I didn't say that was the answer.
Okay.
I'm saying that's the status quo that you're trying to defend.
No, I'm not. No, Senator,
well, then,
listen.
If you're not defending it, then what's your solution?
I'm listening to you.
I'm giving you a solution. Empower the people to make laws and they'll do a better job than their leader.
Okay, so you're kind of, sort of, maybe, perhaps talking about a parliamentary system.
Of course not.
Oh, my God,
I'm not talking about. Here, let me point out one thing.
Okay.
There's only one nation on earth that has what I'm talking about, and what I've designed in law works better than what they have. That's Switzerland.
Switzerland
in 1848 decided to copy our Constitution with one change. They brought the people in as lawmakers in partnership with their elected officials. And now, here's Switzerland, four languages, four cultures, four religions, no resources, and had just finished a three-year religious civil war. And now, since 1848, they've lived in peace. They have no resources, but they've become the wealthiest people per capita in the world.
Well, yes, but they run the biggest bank fraud in the history
of the
human race.
What's that got to do with it?
A, B, how many people live in Switzerland? 10?
Where is it? You got the wrong country. The biggest bank fraud's right here in the United States.
Okay, but I'm talking about their number of bank accounts.
Where is the bank fraud?
No, the bank fraud. Well, let's go back and talk about Nazi Germany, how they used the Swiss bank.
Well, that's right. And Nazi Germany would have loved to invade Switzerland.
Okay.
But because it didn't make any sense, they didn't.
Well, they needed some place to stash the loot that they stole from the Jews.
Well, what do you think all the tyrants are stashing the loot right now? Cayman Islands, Switzerland?
Right, exactly.
Swiss have opened up their banking system. Cayman Islands. What about Luxembourg?
That's true.
You can't use that as a...
They have
a banking interest, and so since they don't have any other resources, they've gone in to the more sophisticated elements of a society, which is banking.
Okay.
So beat on them over that.
Okay.
What have you accomplished? What I'm saying is they live in peace and they have prosperity for their people.
Well, there's only 26 of them in the whole country.
Oh, come on.
Wait a second.
The United States didn't have much more than the Swiss had in 1848.
All right. Let me ask you something pertaining. This is a very interesting conversation, but
I hope you're learning something now.
Oh, I am.
Okay, good.
That's
all I care about. I'm prepared to hang with you to be able to help you.
I appreciate that, Senator. I swear to God I do. Now, let's talk about, on your website, you talk about universal health care vouchers, and I'm just wondering, is this, I don't see the term single payer here. I see universal.
Oh, you know what single payer is? Can I define that for you? I know you've got your definition, but I'll give you mine.
Go ahead.
You know what single payer is? The name of the person is called citizen. The name of the person is called consumer. That's who the single payer is. You think that the government is going to be a single payer. I got to tell you, the government is nothing but a tool of the people. And so if you want to have the government pay for it all, then fine. You're going to pay for it through your taxes, or you're going to pay for it through your consumer products.
Well, of course, rather that than pay $12 billion a week for a war in Iraq. Hell yes.
Well, of course. Hey, wait a second. I won't get behind anybody on my bona fides about ending war.
No. I'm just saying.
Okay, you make it sound.
We know
that the stupidity of wasting our treasure in Iraq
is,
in order to control the oil. But stop and think a moment now, Mike. What about Hillary wanting to control the oil? Obama wanting to control the oil? All of the Democratic senators want to control the oil.
Yeah, well,
because
Senator,
about ending the war.
Senator,
I am talking about withdrawing the troops.
I understand, Senator. I am not a Hillary supporter, nor am I an Obama supporter.
Okay,
but I have to ask you.
I'm trying to make a pitch for you.
Okay, I understand. Define for the listeners what your idea is about health care in this country.
How would people define it? Give me a break.
Okay.
I'll define it right now.
Go ahead.
What I'm for are vouchers, and everybody gets a voucher by signing up for it. They don't have to pay for the voucher. They just sign up and they get it. And what you're entitled to with the voucher is everybody gets the same health care, whether it's glasses, whether it's teeth, you name it, whether you get a cancer operation, everybody gets the same thing. Now, that's the voucher system. Now, in addition to that, that voucher permits you to go out and buy from, let's say, five insurance companies, a plan, and the plans all offer the same thing. There's no difference between the insurance plans that they offer. And so only five. We get away from this predator activity that's going right now with, quote, your liberals. But we'll come back to that in a moment. And so now what happens is that you have a voucher. You can go to any doctor you want. You can go to any hospital you want. We will then have your records put up on computers, and then what you'll be able to do is you can either get one of these insurance plans, or for that matter, we can even throw in Medicare if you think that's so good. And I have Medicare, and I got to tell you, it's not bad.
Okay, question, before I get lost here. Who pays for the voucher?
Now you come to the $64 question. It sure isn't going to be business enterprise. It is going to be the American consumer, because if you buy something, you will be paying a retail sales tax, and part of that tax will go to pay for health care. So that means if you want to spend a lot of money buying a lot of frivolous things, then you're going to be paying a lot. And so when the tourists come over and spend money in the United States, they're going to be contributing to your health costs.
Okay, so the people pay, which is what single
payer. There's no other group.
Okay, why? But then why have insurance companies in the middle there?
First off, all the insurance companies are doing is
screwing all of us. That's what they're doing.
Of course they are. They're predators. You don't know that?
But your plan includes the predators?
Right. And here's the way it works. You have five plans. They all provide the same level of health care.
Right.
So there's no difference in what they provide. What they compete on is how much they're going to provide the services with respect to how much paper. So the least amount of paper, that's what they're, the 30%. That we're paying to shuffle paper around right now is what they're going to compete on, who's going to do the cheapest job. That's competition. Now, if you want, you can go for a single-payer health care, Medicare or Medicaid. Go ahead. That's one of the plans. Let's see what the American people want. A little bit, if you gather what I'm talking about, this thing will never pass the Congress. Oh, no, these people want to sock it to business, and that means the consumers are going to pay.
Okay, hold on a second. Can you stick around, Senator?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, hold on. Got to take a break here. We'll come right back. We're talking to Senator Mike Gravel. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Where's the ice pick?
Humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Senator Mike Gravel. Senator, I don't know where we left off, but I've got a lot of people who would like to ask you some questions.
Okay, but before we do that, I just want to underscore one thing with you.
Okay.
This is a progressive radio station, okay?
Yes.
The word progressive means you move beyond conventional wisdom.
Sure.
You go to progressive new ideas, and that's what my campaign's all about. So let's go to your people who want to ask
questions. I do understand that, and I, like I said at the beginning of this interview, I read your website, and the only thing that got my attention in a possibly negative way is your stand on universal health care vouchers. I am just absolutely opposed to the word voucher in any form, because I know what that term means. But beyond that,
boy, tell me what it means, because all I know, it's a piece of paper.
I have no
problems with vouchers in education. I think we need competition in education.
I think that's one place where you and I would disagree.
But let me tell you where you're at. 30% of our children do not graduate from high school. That is appalling.
Well, that has nothing to do with vouchers. That has nothing to do with vouchers. That has to do with an education system that has been dumbed down by the right wing in this country.
Wait a second, Senator. The liberals have any guilt in that?
And it's been dumbed down. Take, for example, the State Board of Education in Kansas has decided to teach some kind of fantasy called creationism.
Which is ridiculous.
Right, exactly.
I'm just saying that you cannot single out any part of a society that's failing and say that's the answer to it. We all share responsibility.
Well, okay, that's true. But by God, I can single out parts of this society that are
more culpable.
Wait a second. That are more culpable for this failure than others. For example, the war in Iraq. I want nothing to do with this goddamn war in Iraq. But it's being fought, Senator. You're going to have to stop interrupting me, or I'm going to end the interview. Now, I don't want to be a jackass here, but I have let you overtalk me all night. Now, Senator, you're here as my guest, and I want to treat you with respect. But A, stop with the patronizing attitude. I'm not a dumbass. B, stop with the condescension, all right? I am not a stupid man. Now, when I question you, it's because I want to hear what you got to say, not because I'm looking for your wisdom. So let's get that clear. You're a political candidate, and I'm here to interview you. So ease back a tad on this patronizing attitude that you've been putting on me for the past hour, or I will end the interview.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
Now let's
off on you.
Good. Let's only where it concerns the patronizing attitude. I'm looking for answers, and so are my listeners.
Go ahead.
So let's go to the phones. Julie is calling from Tennessee. Listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Go, Julie.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I was calling about the Initiative Act. I kind of tuned in late on it, so I'm not sure if I understood it right. Okay, the people would initiate their own laws and then vote on it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, where I don't really see where it'd be any different than what it is now, because I think what would happen is the big money interest would be investing all this money into the media, and they would sell us their ideas just like they sold us the Iraq war. And I think if we wanted to take our government back, what we'd have to do is take back the Telecommunication Act Clinton signed and go back to having news that was based on facts and not so biased. And second of all, we'd have to go back to publicly financed campaigns, so that way you keep the big money interest out of it and our government would be working for us.
I agree with that.
And I think that would actually...
But you can't... We've just gone through McCain-Feingold, and now we're spending more money than we've ever spent, ever since that law passed. So that must mean that we're not doing something right in the Congress. Would that not be your conclusion?
Yeah.
Then that means if the Congress can't respond to your needs, then maybe we ought to look to the people to respond to those needs.
But right now, you have your big money interest in there, and Congress is working for them instead of us, but wouldn't they do the same thing
right.
to us?
They
would do the same thing to us because... Why
would you say that? Because, first off, let me point out to you that we can design a piece of legislation where you cannot use any corporate monies from anybody in the process of an initiative for or against. Secondly,
I think would be really important with it.
Well, of course. And I just invite you to go to the website, which is the nationalinitiative.us, and you could read this law in great detail. It is less than 5,600 words. And it has all of the details of how this would work so that the people would be protected from the interests that control our lives right now.
Okay, I got a break there. Hold on a second. Senator, if you don't mind, we have some more people like to talk to you. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, we're talking with Senator Mike Gravel, who has a long and illustrious political history and is the nominee or a candidate to be the nominee for the Democratic Party for a presidency in 2008. Are you still there, Senator? Senator Gravel?
Yes.
Okay, back to the phone calls. Let's go to Sanchez, who's calling from Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Yes, good evening, Mike, and good evening, Senator.
Yes.
First of all, bravo to you for the reading of the Pentagon Papers. I have always wanted to tell you that. So
thank
you. Bravo to you for that. Two quick questions here. You were speaking earlier about why Congress isn't exercising its power. Specifically, despite all the obvious high crimes and misdemeanors committed by this administration, all the constitutional violations that have gone on against the American people, why isn't Congress supporting H.R. 333? And that includes all of the presidential candidates in the Democratic Party at this point.
I can't answer that. All I can say is that the nature of representative government has weakened the nature of representative that we have. And I was outlining earlier why they don't do certain things. Politicians learn straight on that what they have to do to avoid alienating one side or the other is to say nothing, but then make you think that they're saying a lot. The joke in that regard is a clever politician can tell you to go to hell and make you look forward to the trip. And that's what they do, whether it's Hillary, whether it's Obama, whether it's the others. They just don't say anything, and they don't want to say anything because it's dangerous. They'll lose votes if they turn around and say something.
Bill is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Bill, welcome to the program. Say hi to the senator.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening, Senator. Senator, another presidential candidate here in Phoenix posed this question to a room full of people, a rather large room full of people. He asked, do we need to reopen the investigation with regard to the events of 9/11? The room answered him resoundingly, yes.
Yeah.
What say you?
I've been hit with that question extensively as I move around. And what I've promised, and that is that I will initiate, I become president, I will initiate an additional investigation. I found with respect to the assassination of John Kennedy that every time we added a new investigation, we all learned additional information that essentially left the Warren Commission very much desiring to make changes if we could make the changes.
All right. Bill is calling from Champaign, Illinois, listening via the Internet. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Even though I've interviewed you for my show, the Illinois Labor Hour, on WFT, I'm a first-time caller to yours.
Right.
And anyway, there's some things about Senator Gravel that I really like, which is...
Well, no, you're talking directly to him.
Right. Oh, okay. Senator, yeah, I like your stance on the Iraq War and the drug war. However, your sales tax, I don't like that at all. And your vouchers for health care and so on and so forth. I really feel like you're the outside bet for the capitalist ruling class in case people get too out of hand.
Well, wait a second. Say that again, that I am the for the capitalist ruling class?
Yes.
Well, if
and
that's
I'm a
the
member
case,
of,
why don't they pour a lot of money into my campaign? I've only raised $100,000.
Well, I said you're the outside bet in case things get out of hand. Things
or,
get
or
out of hand,
capitalist?
Then you'll be getting a lot of money.
Oh, my God. Well, I hope that they can hurry up before I expire.
But anyway, I'm a member of the Laborers International Union in North America. We got about 750,000 members. I'm sure that they'll be supporting whoever the capitalist class puts
up. Well, here, I'll tell you, I have 100% of voting record with labor. I've always been a supporter of labor, but and I predicted that labor would lose a lot of its power 20, 30 years ago. And so what they concentrate on is, of course, wages. And then when you lose your job, you got screwed because you got nothing. What they ought to concentrate on is capital ownership. And if you're familiar with Kelso Economics, you'd see that that might be a way that we could really enrich all Americans. But, of course, that's out of the box, and it's very difficult for people to understand what is out of the box. And I faced that problem all of my career. Now, with respect to the income tax. It's the most corrupt form of taxation we have. It's the middle class that carries the burden. The wealth have gamed the system, and the poor get nothing. And now, and that's what you got.
But
and I don't know
right,
if any
Democrats out there trying to change it. Let me ask you a question, Senator. Wouldn't it be better to eliminate the tax loopholes and keep a graduated income tax? Well, don't laugh. Let me finish the question, then laugh. Keep the graduated income tax for a couple of reasons. First of all, a sales tax is horribly regressive. We all know that. It falls most prominently on poor people. When we talk about the rich or the tourists coming to this country and they would pay more because they buy more, that's a false argument. It may be true, essentially, but a sales tax as the sole means of income, this is a Neil Bortz idea, who is a right-wing libertarian, and I think it's nonsense. So wouldn't it be better to restructure the income tax, take the burden off the middle class, put it where it belongs, on the wealthy and the corporations? I pay more taxes than Ford Motor paid last year, so and that's insane. So don't you think it would be better to have a graduated income tax?
Well, when do you think you're going to get it?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
No, I'm serious. I was on the finance committee for 8 years.
I have no idea, but as long as we're talking about cleaning, as long as we're talking about cleaning up the system, as long as we're talking about the American public.
Okay, you want to give me some time to respond?
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first off, you started with the premise that the sales tax is regressive. It's not. It's exactly the same as the income tax. The more you earn, the more you pay. The more you spend, the more you pay. Now, why the income tax is corrupt is because it's been gained by the wealthy people in this country. Now, what would happen if you had a sales tax that you now made even more progressive than it is? And we do that with a prebate.
A prebate.
So you take the tax that you will be spending on the essentials of life, and we send you a check every month for what that tax will be. That will give the poor people the first time in human history, in American history, where they have a cash flow where they get nothing
How do you figure a prebate? What's it based on?
If you have a sales tax, you're going to spend so much money for food, lodging, transportation, clothing, and medicine. Those are the essentials of life. Now, what you could do is you could give an exception at the grocery store. But the minute you give one exception, then it's Katie bar the door. You go back to the gay people gaming the system. What we need is to have is a tax system where you know exactly what I'm paying and I know what exactly you're paying. But now, in order to deal with these essentials of life, which are very important, and that's the regressive part you're trying to address. Well, how we solve that problem is we can make a determination, and the math is not difficult, and that is we determine that X amount of dollars are what you're going to spend for the essentials of life, either at the poverty level or at the average American. You take that sum of money, what the tax you will be paid, and we send that as a check to you. So at the beginning of the month, you get a check ostensibly for the taxes you're going to pay that month for the essentials. Now, if you want to go on a diet and not eat so much, you can save the money. And what happens under this system is we take a consuming society like ourselves and we change it to a saving society, and that's the only way we're going to solve the problem of climate change.
Okay. All right. Bob is calling from San Diego. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Senator Gravel, I have a question. And it has to do with the voter initiative, and I've been thinking about that for some time, and I like the idea. However, as a minority, specifically a gay male, I'm afraid of what the majority of people would vote. And, for example, I wouldn't even trust my mother to vote for my welfare, and that scares me.
Well, you shouldn't be scared, first off, because if you followed the polls when I was in the Senate, to be pro-gay, as I was as a senator, you had about 40 to 45% of the people on your side. Today, it's 55 to 60% of the people of Americans that are for gays having the same rights. Now, with respect to marriage, I would predict that within 5 years, you will see that the issue of marriage will be long gone. what happens, and I speak very, and in fact, I am the poster boy for the gay community right now. I'm the only one that I know that says that marriage is proper for any human being who loves another human being. I don't care if they're female, male, or what have you. And so, but what you have to understand is that you want your rights. These are civil rights. Forget that you're gay or not. You want your rights, you fight for your rights. There's nothing in our society that comes for nothing. And I always advocate for gays to come out of the closet and fight for your rights. There's nothing wrong. Be proud of what you are. Be proud of what you are. And don't live in fear and cower that you're going to be discriminated against. Assert your rights and you'll find that people will back down.
Well, that's very encouraging. It's just that for right now I don't have that much faith in the public.
That's fine. Then have the faith in Wall Street, who's controlling our society now.
Okay.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Thank you.
You don't think that Rubin and the Clinton economics are not controlling our society on the Democratic side?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Go ahead, Bob.
I'm on the line. It's like 50% one way, 50% the other. I don't know where I am.
Well, I know, but all I can say is, if you're gay, be proud of what you are.
Oh, I am.
And I don't care what your mother says.
Oh,
you know, she's dead wrong. You know, you're a human being. You got civil rights, and you're entitled to live the life you want.
I am very proud of who I am.
Then
okay, fellas.
Sorry
to interrupt. We need to take a break here. Hold on just a second, Senator, to everybody else. We'll come back for one more segment and try to squeeze in a couple more questions for Senator Mike Gravel. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Yeah, he does. 9 minutes before the hour. All right, we're talking to Senator Gravel, Mike Gravel, who is seeking the Democratic Party nomination for the presidency. All right, let me give all three of these questions. They came in via email, Senator, and then you can answer if you don't mind.
Okay, do them one at a time.
All right,
this
comes from Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She writes, the poor pay much more of their income in sales taxes. Gravel's premise is incorrect. The rich don't buy more, they invest more, and there's no sales tax on investment.
And?
Well, she's making the point that your idea won't work.
Well, she's entitled to have that view.
Okay, here's the next one. This comes from Terry in Seattle. Bonds, annuities, mortgages, and all the other buying and selling games that the ruling elite engage in routinely. Please ask Mike Gravel if his sales tax would include the buying and selling of stocks.
The sales tax would be on all new products and services, and we would stay out of. Now, that's the buying and selling of bonds. If you want to tax that another way, you can. That's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. And, of course, I would have a graduated what you call the death tax, and so that we could increase that. I've got no problems with that.
So investments would not be taxed?
No. Here, you invest your money, and you would not be taxed, which means that around the world they would bring money to the United States to invest it here, create jobs so that people could be employed and be independent and have prosperity. Right now, we have become a Rust Belt country because of two things, our system of taxation and because we make business pay for health care, which makes them uncompetitive in the world on both counts.
Okay, last one via email. This listener, KW, wants a 15% value-added tax to fund European-style health care. What do you feel about that?
15% value? Well, first off, I'm not keen on a VAT. because it still goes through the corporate entity. Why not have a 20% sales tax? 5 of it goes to finance the health care. And then if the people want more health care, they can turn around and have an initiative and vote to increase the tax to get more health care. Let's let the people decide.
Okay, let's go back to calls here very quickly. Raven is calling from Florida. Raven, welcome to the program.
Hi, welcome, Mike. Love your show.
Thank you.
And, Senator, the question is it your national sales tax, is that pretty much the same thing as the fair tax program?
Say it again.
The fair tax program?
I part company with it, and Mike was talking about Bortz. Have you ever heard Bortz endorse me? Hell no. I really call it the fair green tax. Because if we can change this country from being a consumption country, and of course, as a nation right now, we spend more than we earn. That means we're on a verge to bankruptcy. And all these politicians running for president that can tell you what they're going to do, they can't do it. We're looking at a $50 trillion shortfall. Where are they going to get the money to do anything? We're going bankrupt.
No, I agree, but it's pretty much the same process as the fair tax. Correct.
No, not well. But yeah, it is. It is essentially, and
okay.
I must say that the people who are backing up the fair tax publicly, like I heard Kathleen Harris in Florida talking about the fair tax, and I was a little embarrassed that I have the same position as she has. That's probably the only position we agree on. But it's a very simple process, and that is our system of taxation right now disadvantages the poor totally, and it carries the burden to the average American, and you'd think that we might have a solution to solve that problem, but of course we don't. And you don't hear any presidential candidate talking about solving the taxation problem, the revenue problem, because what happens is until we do that, we will not be able to address any of our domestic problems properly.
I agree. I'm on your side. And one other thing, I am a Desert Storm warrior. I served over the 7 months. And I think it's the biggest insult that Halliburton now has moved over Dubai. That really makes me mad. They take all of our money, our contracts, and all that, and then they move out of the country.
That's right. That's right.
And I mean, I think someone should look into that. That is an insult.
Well,
all right,
tell you.
Raven, let me leave it there, Raven. Let's try one more call here. Dave is calling from Anderson, Indiana. Dave, go ahead very quickly.
Yeah, I just wondered what his position is on nationalized health care. I deal in the health care industry and see thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of bills come across my desk from a private carrier.
I don't understand the question.
All right. Well, we lost Dave. We lost Dave. I guess he's on a cell phone. Dave, if you're still listening, we had answered that earlier on. Susan is calling from Alabama. Susan, very quickly. Hey, Susan.
Mike, yeah,
yes.
I'm here.
Go ahead, very quickly.
I wanted to go back to the vouchers. I just have a comment.
Quick.
I think the vouchers equal privatization, and privatization equals corporatism.
All right. All right, well, Senator, it's been...
Could I answer that question?
Very quickly, yeah.
Yeah, very quickly, and that is Clintonism is what has brought about the corporatization of the America of the Democratic Party, and that's what I oppose.
All right, Senator Gravel, I'm sorry. Thanks a lot for sitting here and chatting with us, and I do appreciate it. For more information about the Mike Gravel campaign, go to gravel2008.us. Thanks a lot, Senator.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. Hey, everybody, it's Mike Malloy here. It is Friday night. Sorry about the problems with the program tonight, but the Commander-in-Chief in Phoenix has decided that we should do a rebroadcast. We have some technical screw-ups. It's either the fault of the National Security Agency or the weather. or the phone company. Take your pick. But I'll see you Monday night, regular time, regular place. It's just tonight the problems are a bit overwhelming. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malone. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. I feel like I was just in a street brawl. I don't know why. A couple of emails here from... yes, Catherine.
I was just going to say it was some sort of bizarre version of, you know, some senior version of WWE SmackDown or something. I don't know. I'm grumpy, damn it!
Regarding, this is from, Waimea says a couple of things, and then this. Regarding his direct voting idea, how can the ordinary person know how to vote on intricate tax law? Perhaps involving a variety of trusts? Or how does an ordinary person weigh scientific or medical testimony? Right. I think there's a reason that we have organized ourselves around the idea of a republic. You know, where we vote. Sure, I'd like to get rid of the electoral college system. I think that's nonsense. That goes back to white supremacy and landowners and white landowners making the final decision. You know, there was a time when it's only been recently that senators were directly elected and not elected by state legislatures. But this idea of a sales tax replacing income tax to me is nonsense. It's just utter nonsense. While at the same time, investment income is not taxed. Jesus. And some of the answers I got from Mike Gravel tonight just sounded like they came out of a funhouse. I'm sorry if he's your candidate, and I like what was at his website, but you never know until you start talking to somebody. I don't know what I had no idea what he's talking about these direct democracy initiatives. If you want direct democracy, I don't care how you define it. It's mob rule because like the man who called in identified himself as gay and Gravel starts lecturing him about to be proud. What the hell? The man probably is proud that he's gay. But that doesn't stop some half-witted idiot gathering up a group of his friends and murdering him. Two words, Matthew Shepard. Come on with this nonsense. And as far as the American public, all of us, I'm not educated enough scientifically educated enough to, economically educated enough to come up with ideas that I want to vote on for tax shelters or the elimination thereof or medical procedures. I mean, Jesus, that's why I vote for someone to represent me, assuming that that person has the understanding I don't. Now, granted, the system is broken. It's totally corrupted. Get corporate money out of it. Get campaign finance reform going. But I'm sorry, folks. I had Mike Gravel on because because so many people sent me emails and said, "Oh God, you got to hear this guy, man. Listen. Okay, I listened. And I read his website. And at the beginning of the night, after reading his website, it's like, oh wow, hey, this is really cool. Where do I sign up? And anybody who starts their interview by saying Dennis Kucinich is irrelevant, to me that is just, I'm sorry, or that Dennis Kucinich is as bad as the rest of them, I can't, I'm sorry. So if Gravel is still your candidate, go with it, stay with it, but not me. I'm sorry. I got to hear what I wanted to hear, and that's the end of that. Yes?
Yeah, draft Al Gore now. But I thought that the caller who called up who was gay was probably the cut to the chase the most tonight, just in saying he didn't want people like his own mother, for example, deciding on laws that would impact gay marriage. I mean, he didn't want those kind of possibly irrational, bigoted opinions out there grouping together, as you know they would, and forming some sort of giant opinion in this country. Well, no, gays can't get married. Or passing, what if they decided to pass, I mean, where do you draw the line? What if they decided to pass legislation that it was illegal to be gay? Well, what stops the irrational legislation?
Well, he said that most, he quoted some, I don't know where he got the statistic, that 55-65% of the American public is in favor of gay marriage. That may be, but that's an opinion poll. That's not what happens at the polls when people go to vote. So I just. All right, a couple of emails here. This is from James, who writes a lot at where does James Risser write? James, I'm drawing a complete blank. Anyway, James writes, wow, he sort of lost me when he's going to have everyone get insurance cards with the same coverage from five identical sources. Why five? Why not one? 27. Why do you have to sign up for this card if everyone is getting one? Very confusing. James says, I'm not voting on the best heart stent or best antidepressant medication, and I can't tell a poisonous mushroom from one for pizza. And I sort of like having an FDA from time to time. We need a candidate who's a bit nuts, but not too nuts. Please, James. Yeah, okay. That sales tax thing lost me. And this is from Ron, who writes in, Mike, I'm not sure, but it seems Senator Gravel is muddled and at the same time confrontational, but kind of baselessly, like he's playing devil's advocate with the devil, as it were. His points sound hobbled together on the fly. Is he a spoiler, a tempest in a teapot, a neocon plant, or what? Is he a savant that says what occurs to him extemporaneously? His responses have the flavor of truism and homily, and not well-considered facets of an election platform. They sound like the prejudices of a bitter old man, not the promises of a devoted public servant. He's grumpy and condescending, and he kind of scares me now. I love his chutzpah. God knows I'm ready for some fisticuffs with the vermin in D.C., but he doesn't seem to have both feet in the real world. Kucinich 08 is my bet. That is, if Al doesn't step up. Yeah, I don't know. If you folks have any comments about Mike Gravel, I'll certainly take them. Again, if he's your candidate and you think he's great, because that's what I heard. So many people emailed me, excuse me, and said, you've got to have him on. This guy's the real deal. Okay. Went right past me. I swear to God. Plus the things I did catch. We're stinky. I just didn't like them. A national sales tax is horse feathers. That's a right-wing Neil Bortz, right-wing libertarian point of view that is nonsense because it simply doesn't. It is so base, just grossly unfair. Somebody that makes $100,000 a year and invests as much as he or she can, and somebody who makes $20,000 a year is just struggling, has to spend every dime. That's right. There's going to be a prebate. Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm just not going for it. Stephen is calling from Chicago. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Mike. I'm a Gravel supporter and a Gravel contributor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a couple points I want to make without being too confrontational.
Okay.
One, I think it'll help you understand where he comes from economically. If you go back, his advisor is Lawrence Kotlikoff, who wrote The Coming Generational Storm, which talks about America's broke. We have a debt of $50 trillion of commitment that we have,
mm-hmm.
and we're bankrupt. And if you understand that point of view, a lot of his economic policy then looks more reasonable. The second point I wanted to make is...
Why does it look more reasonable?
We're bankrupt. And if you
But try, we've essentially been bankrupt for probably 75 years.
No. Since Vietnam, we've been in an increasing deficit situation. But for example,
I guess I'm being a little bit too esoteric. I'm going back to the time, not 75 years, but I guess it was during the when was it? When did we go off the gold standard? When did we go off the silver standard? When did we get to the point where our money, even our dollar bills, is all Federal Reserve notes, which means it's backed by nothing?
That's right. That was in 73.
Okay, 73.
And since 73, we've been building up a large contingent liability. It's only in this Bush administration that we've doubled it. And it's getting worse and worse and worse, and we're cranking it up at about $6 trillion dollars a year now.
So how does Gravel's economic ideas staunch that flow of capital outflow or whatever it's called? I don't
know. He's trying to create a capital-friendly environment, which, you know, doesn't sit well with people who don't like capital. I understand that. However, there's a saying, capital goes where it's treated nicely. And you may not like it, but that's the real politics.
Well, but Stephen, do we not live in a society that is governed by capital? Are we not now a corporatist state? I'm sorry, you're losing me again.
Okay. That's why, you know,
Hold on. Let me take a break. I'll come back to you because I would like to get an answer. All of a sudden tonight, for the first time in 24 years of doing talk radio, I feel like the dumbest son of a bitch on radio. I don't know what the hell these people are talking about, Kathy. I don't know what Steven's talking about. I don't know what Gravel was talking about. I didn't know what half the callers were talking about. They seem to be understanding each other. Yetta, 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 yetta. And here I sit like, what in the hell is going on?
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
But we're never gonna survive unless we get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless we are a little
23 past the hour. For some reason, I feel dizzy. All right, back to Stephen, who's called in from Chicago. Now, where were we, Stephen? Because I desperately need you to explain to me what Gravel... All right, go ahead.
This is hard to do in a soundbite. That's why I want to recommend, again, Lawrence Kotlikoff, The Coming Generational Storm. But let me try. Yes, we live in a corporatist state. Yes, we're into semi-fascism. But how do you make it successful and not get overthrown? Bread and circuses. There are any number of policies in our government, in our culture, that are consumer-friendly, that encourage consumption at the expense of investment. Therefore, we have hollowed out our economy. We have hollowed out our industry. We are much poorer than we really think we are, and it's going to come, and it's going to come to roost.
Okay, wait, let me interrupt as you go along here. I don't disagree with that, but how in the world does Mike Gravel's plan correct that? We already live in a society where most corporations only pay 7% of their, after they jigger their profits around, some of them pay nothing. When I said I pay a higher tax rate than Ford Motor Company, I'm not kidding. And I'm just in the middle class, for God's sake.
Yes.
So what, if Gravel is talking about, and I don't even know that he is, but if he's talking about zero taxes on corporations or making this a corporate-friendly society, what the hell is it now?
It's not. It's a finance capital friendly society. It is not a production friendly society.
But capital is not going to go someplace where a worker is $20 an hour. It's going to go someplace where a worker is 20 cents an hour. That's where capital goes. You can't make America capital friendly when you're dealing like that, unless you want to reduce this country to third world, fourth world, fifth world caveman status. Now, again, what the hell is he talking about?
Okay. I can't support his specifics right this minute because it's a long.
Well, I'm tired of this nonsense. You can't support it. He can't support it. Nobody can support it. The man is full of it. He is out of his mind. Stephen, thanks. Let me move on. This is insanity. If Gravel supporters can't explain it, you can't do it in a soundbite. I had the man on for goddamn near 2 hours. And he still couldn't support it. What the hell is he talking about? This is nonsense. This is ridiculous. I'll tell you what Mike Gravel is. He's a freak. I mean, I don't know if he's a freak or not. All right, Kathy says, don't say that. What he says is freakoid. You don't. What does he want to do? He wants to attract capital and production. Listen to me, everybody. We live in a globalized world. Capital goes where it gets the best deal. It doesn't give a damn about America's indebtedness. It doesn't give a damn about Chinese pollution. It doesn't give a damn about Indian engineers coming over here to work for 30 grand as opposed to 100 grand. It doesn't care. So what is Gravel talking about? He's going to make capital all of a sudden have a conscience, a mind, hands and legs and eyes and feet. Stop it. Stop this craziness. Mike Gravel is out of his freaking mind.
I think you're being a little bit hard on the
I'm not being hard. I don't like being played for a sucker by anybody, whether it is George W. Bush or these theories of Mike Gravel. This is nonsense. We are already at a point where the American worker is working his ass off just to stay even like a rat on a treadmill. Real income today is lower than it was in 1976. So what do these Neil Bortzes and these Mike Gravels want? They want us to work for 20 cents an hour and then fund everything with a sales tax? This is insanity.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Right, 26 before the hour, some very creative emails coming in here. This is from William, the software diplomat. He says in the subject line, you don't understand it because when you were growing up, you never learned how to speak horse crap. Sales tax is cruel and regressive. Vouchers are asinine and will work about as well as Bush's abstinence-only education program. Just because we are broke doesn't mean we need to make insane financial choices. This is the same mindset that allowed so many people to jump out of windows when the stock market crashed. To me, suicide is not a solution. And economic suicide is definitely not the solution. This is from Dean. Oh, it's in the form of a script here, titled Priceless Recap of the Interview. Caller. Hello, Senator. My question is, Gravel. Of course. And ting tang, walla walla, bing bang. Caller. That's brilliant. Thank you, Senator. Gravel. Of course. Malloy. Senator, I believe that's a chorus from David Seville's The Witch Doctor. Gravel. Snort, snort, my God, where do you get these ideas? The Witch Doctor was by Sheb Wooley. The American people know that. Why don't you? Malloy. No, Senator, I specifically remember that song. It was by David Seville. Sheb Wooley sang The Purple People Eater. Gravel. You're dead wrong. Now are you going to listen to me and benefit from my wisdom? Malloy. Tiredly. All right, Senator, go ahead. Gravel. Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom. Don't you just love it? Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom, boom, boom. It's quite simple, really? Makes sense to me, Dean writes, but so does Eraserhead. This is from Amanda. Dear Mike, the subject line, thanks, I think. She writes, Dear Mike and Kathy, just heard the interview with Senator Gravel. Whoa, what a freaking nutcase! I think he has some kind of identity crisis. You know, part Repub, part Libertarian, what the hell? And then calling himself Democrat, holy Shiite. And the bit with the gay man, I don't care what your mother says about you, she's wrong. That's an old joke from the 1920s. Although I think it might be a little different, but it's close. Well, so much for the freak. Yeah, he's an angry old white man, someone I've been trying to get away from my whole life. You did all your listeners a great service tonight, now that we realize who's truly irrelevant, and it's not Kucinich. Thanks. Listening to you here in Sacramento, Amanda.
Yeah, I was a little bit, and I'm a straight white woman, but I was a little bit put off.
You are?
Can you believe it? I was... I know you wish sometimes, but anyway, I was a little bit off put by, come on now, come out of the closet, be free to be you, it's okay, you can come out.
What is that?
Be a proud gay man, come out, tell your friends to come out.
Tell your mother she's crazy. This is from William in Hollywood, I think, he says. Mike, I just feel like I stepped into the Twilight Zone and I can't get out. What are these people talking about? Sounds like the earth just shifted on its axis and I'm falling off. Well, that's the way I feel. I mean, I don't know. And with due respect to the callers who are trying to explain this to me but can't explain it to me. I mean, the United States of America has become... no offense to sex workers, the strapped down, tied down whore of corporate America. Corporate America does anything it wants to do to this country and walks away with a crap-eaten grin on its face. And what does Gravel want to do? Make it even easier? I'm sorry. I'm glad he released the Pentagon Papers. God bless you, Michael. But that was 1,000 years ago. Jesus, retire. Take a break. And take McCain with you. Oh. Is there someone? Okay. Here, Steve is calling from Folsom, California. Steve, you're going to explain Gravel's taxation plan to us, right?
Yeah, I'll explain it in nine words.
Okay.
The more money you make, the more tax you pay.
The more money you make, the more tax you pay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a law that goes into antiquity. I don't know if your screener got it wrong. I'm absolutely against what Gravel was saying.
No. Our screener never, Ian, who's our producer, associate producer, never gets anything wrong.
No, I wasn't going to defend. I wasn't going to defend what Gravel
I know.
Was saying.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay. I understand you were making a joke. What is the problem here? I can't.
It's a principle that goes back into antiquity. The more money you make, the more tax you pay. And since corporations are considered to be individuals by the law, Exxon Corporation should be paying the most tax.
Well, that's very
Sorry,
true.
Sorry, I'm getting a little bit upset myself. But.
I can't. I just feel, you know, back in the day when I used to work for this defunct network called IE America, not Air America, that's going to be defunct soon too, but IE America, when I worked for them, I tried to have politicians on. I had, who'd I have on, Kathy? Who were the leaders back then? The Senate Majority Leader before?
The one you kept hanging up on?
The one I kept hanging up on.
It was either Tom Daschle. Or Dick Gephardt.
And Gephardt was the House Minority Leader. And even though they're Democrats, and I wanted so desperately to understand what they were saying and believe in them, you know, every time I would have them on, I would just jab daggers into my legs because they were insane, out of their minds. That's when I realized that the Democratic Party was controlled by people who belong in rubber bungalows. And now this guy.
Well, as a conspiracy fact person myself, remember the family jewels. Maybe these guys were got to. Maybe the CIA got to these guys.
That's maybe.
I mean, because he had a great resume. Just like you said, during Vietnam, he had a great resume. He did some great things. But if this, maybe the reason he's got any voice at all is because that's what the corporations are allowing.
I guess so. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate what you had to say. This is from... The subject line says, the interview was staged, right? The email says, I recognized you, but who played the old drunk guy? Was it Charles Durning? Great bit. Who played the old drunk guy?
I'm grumpy, damn it. I think that was Dana Carvey, circa Saturday Night Live.
I'm sorry. I know, Kathy. You know, you and I are sitting here just thoroughly pissing off people who support Mike Gravel. who still support him after that hour and a half long discussion that just, I feel like I was in a house of mirrors, just going round and round and round. Senator, can you give me a straight answer? I've already given you a straight answer. When? What's the matter with you? I'm older than you and smarter than you. I released the Pentagon Papers, goddammit. Oh. And you know, the answer to the question, I agree with what he said when he said take a sledgehammer to the Diebold machines, except for one thing. I think that if you do that, you'll wind up in jail. Only Gravel was being literal. Smash him. Okay, I'm all for that, Senator. But that really puts into perspective how seriously you take your presidential campaign. You're advocating felonies. Now, I can advocate felonies because I'm a half-witted now talk show host. But you released the Pentagon Papers. All right. Well, let's get this is the third in the row, Steve. All right, Stephen, you're the third Stephen. Tell me what this man was talking about taxes, please.
This man is nuts. His idea of the fair tax is crack smoking stupid.
It is indeed.
Our founding fathers understood the idea that if you let wealth accumulate, it will take over the government. We had royalty at the time of the founding fathers.
Duh.
We had an upper class.
Yes, we did.
And they didn't think that people could rule themselves. The conservatives back then thought, we need the king to run things. This whole idea of the people running things, that's really weird, and they can't do it. And,
right.
You know, Thomas Jefferson was out at town meetings in the Iroquois Nation seeing democracy work.
Right.
That's where he got the idea.
Not from the Greeks.
Not from the Greeks. It was, like, a lot closer to home. And
no, Steve, it was the Swiss. It's the Swiss. Forget their banks. It's the Swiss. What's wrong with you, Steve?
Oh, I guess I'm just a socialist. I believe in, you know, power to the people and all that stuff.
Oh, God.
But we've got 60% of U.S.-based corporations now pay no taxes.
Right, exactly.
40%.
How do we make it more friendly for corporations? Oh, I know. Pay American workers a buck an hour.
20 cents.
Oh,
we got to compete with the commies.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Jesus. All right.
And you got to understand that 40% of international trade right now is something called transfer pricing. This is a tax scam.
Yeah.
Walmart makes something in China for a buck.
Right.
They put it on a boat. The boat steams towards the U.S. Chugga, chugga, chugga. Meanwhile, they send a fax to their Cayman Island or wherever subsidiary.
Yeah.
They trade it back and forth themselves. They get up to 10 bucks.
Right.
They bring into the U.S. at 10.50. They pay tax on the 50 cents. The whole $1 to $10 thing is like off
tax,
the door.
Right. And it goes into somebody's pocket.
Well, theirs.
Maybe it goes in the pockets of the Swiss. Maybe that's why the Walton family owns the entire planet, do you suppose?
It could be.
Stephen, I got to leave it there. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, my God. What happened to the program tonight? It's about 10 before the hour. Thank you, Jesus. program tonight was engineered by Ian Huff at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. Ian also answered your calls. That must have been fun. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Billy Foster was a moderator at NovemRadio.com chat room tonight. Thanks to the moderators at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. Catherine Bates, the executive producer. Don't forget, Sam Cedar fills in for me this Thursday night, and I'll be live from Seattle on Friday. And another welcome to XM Satellite Radio listeners listening on Channel 167. some really great emails coming in here. I don't have we're going to have time to do them all. Bill in San Francisco writes, "Hi, Mike. Was the senator just giving you a hard time, or was he demonstrating the highly refined communication skills he, as president, would apply in sensitive negotiations with international leaders? If it's the latter, I'm moving to Mars. That said, I hope you'll interview the other presidential candidates as soon as possible. I'd love to hear their perspectives, and I'd love to learn which candidates, if any, would decline your invitation to be interviewed." Well, I don't think Hillary would come on the program. What else? All right, back to some phone calls here before we before the clock runs out on us. Michael is calling from Chicago. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good, good. I listen to you every night. Great show. Just have a couple of things to say. Listening to that senator, if we were corporate friendly, then we would not only be in the voucher line, but we'd be in a soup line because we'd all be broke.
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Be so high would be ridiculous, and I don't see where that would work at all.
I don't know.
My second statement is about impeachment. I do agree with him that the people should have a choice or be able to vote within a certain parameter. Like, say, if there is a gross negligence, like what is going on now, the people should be able to vote to impeach the sitting president if he's not doing his job. I think that should be allowed or written in some kind of way. I don't know how because I'm not a politician, but we need to have some type of voice in this situation because what we're in now is that Bush is just going to do what he wants, and he doesn't give a damn about the people of America and what they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what. Oh, where'd he go? Michael?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry. We almost lost the connection. What was that last thing you said?
I was saying that Bush does not give a damn about the American public.
No, he doesn't.
And so I believe the American public should somehow be able to vote on any president that's sitting that
right.
You know, is doing the type of things that he is doing.
Right, I agree. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I don't have any problem with you. The American public has been voting every day. What is Bush's approval rating down to now? 26%? The American public has been voting every day for the past three and a half years to get this bastard out of office, and it's doing no good whatsoever. We've already spoken about impeachment. Tim is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, my brother. How you doing there?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing, my friend. Hey, I just want to say, this guy's a Democrat.
I guess.
Whatever, going down the tubes. Hey, right. Next time I call, I know I ain't got much time now. Next time I'll have to call you about a big victory of Zeitgeist.
So, all right.
All right, my brother. It's,
all right,
it's
thanks.
Working, man. I got it all figured out, and I'll tell you about
all
it.
All right, good, Tim. Somebody needs to set me straight. Dear God. Yeah, Zeitgeist. I've gotten so many people who have written into me and said, please talk about the movie Zeitgeist. I haven't seen it yet. What we watched over the weekend was Occupation 101, and I haven't had a chance to talk about it yet, but it's about the occupation of the Palestinian territories in Israel. And I sat there watching that thing and sobbed. I I'm a hardened son of a bitch. I mean, very few things make me cry, but that was just horrible.
I watched Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, and
yeah, you did,
had
didn't
a Bush
you?
Moment.
Well, you had a Bush moment. Yeah. Well, I can't take any more Bush moments. Let's see who we got here. Gordon is calling from Oklahoma City, listening on the internet. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, Mike. I just wanted to talk about your program tonight. Wow.
Yeah, really.
I used to think that I would be for Gravel maybe a little bit, and that sure did change my mind. I'm not going to be for him.
Well, I kind of had that feeling after going to his website this evening and taking a look at his position. Although where it concerned medical care for us Americans, I wasn't real clear on what he was talking about. And when he comes up with this complicated voucher system, oh, bat squeeze. We don't need that. We need single payer so we all have insurance.
Well, and I don't trust his idea on the referendum or whatever he wants to call it. I just did some quick research, and since 1998, which is fairly recently, there have been 27 out of 28 states that passed the ban on equality in marriage.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think that fares very well for any kind of issues concerning gay and lesbian.
Yeah, that's what I said. I don't know what the hell he was talking about when he was saying to the man who identified himself as gay, as be strong, be proud. Well, the guy didn't come into this program whimpering like, I'm queer, please help me, Jesus. That's not what he was saying. You know, he was saying, all right, you know, what you're suggesting, Senator, would probably cost me my life. And Gravel's answer was, well, just, you know, be proud, stand up and say you're gay. Tell your friends to come out. Like, oh, please, this is not 19, this is not pre-Stonewall.
Yeah, how are you going to be proud when you're being drugged behind the back of a car or something down the highway?
Yeah,
you know?
Really. Then you can say, yeah, but I'm gay, and I'm proud. Oh, my God. Thanks, Gordon. I got to go. Appreciate you checking in. Weirdness abounds. Weirdness abides, like the dude. Is it time to go already?
Can we vote for him?
The dude?
The dude.
Oh, yeah. I'd vote for the dude in a heartbeat. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for participating. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.